Good evening, you all. This is KC2WGB. My name is John. Along with Dick, K2RIW, we, as Dick says, attempt to operate this technet to disseminate information, which a lot of people are appreciating. Unfortunately, Dick may not be with us tonight. He's operating from an HT from the hospital. He sustained an injury to his leg while negotiating a wheelbarrow on his property and cleaning up efforts around his property with so much stuff. The wheelbarrow evidently tipped over and struck him in the tibia just about 3 inches above the ankle and caused a gash. That's approximately a week ago. He was doing some home remedies, which did not work out too well, so he went to the emergency room last night, and he was admitted, of course, you know, to prevent sept and other things. So he is being treated. He's given triple antibiotics intravenously, and seems to be doing well. I spoke to him about 4 times today. Let me let it drop. Now, whether or not he'll be going for hyperbaric pressurized chamber oxygenation, I don't know. They may do that. He didn't mention it. But he expects to be there possibly 2 to 3 days. So just to let you know, that's what's going on. He's in good spirits, and they're taking good care of him. But this was at night, and he got whacked pretty bad. So nothing's broken. It's just a gash that's not healing properly. So that's what he is doing, and he's going to try to operate from an HT. He may be able to monitor. I don't know if he'll be able to transmit. So let me let it drop again. Tonight, the format will be slightly different. Dick will not be here with his generous information, but we will take questions and sign-ins, of course. And a little different tonight. For the past 3 weeks, we've been covering Sandy, the hurricane. And I would like to hear from all of you people out there the experience, what you see happening with FEMA, the local community governments, maybe the volunteers, and exactly what's going on, what you see. Also, maybe we could discuss, or you could let us know, what did you learn? How would you prepare differently when you hear the next warning? If it would make a change, would you do anything different? And I know we've spoken about generators and a lot of preps, so at this time, take check-ins, and we'll see if we can help anybody out there with those questions. It's KC2WGB. My name is John.
K2YO. KD2AOC. Dennis.
K2MU. Bernie.
WS2N Paul with the space report. Good evening, John.
N2XGN. Good evening, John.
Okay, so far I have Bernie, Dennis, and Monkey's Uncle, Bernie again, and Paul with the space report. Very good, Paul. And Wesley. Any other check-ins?
KB2GLI, Steve.
India Whiskey, Jim.
KD2CYZ, Glenn. Good evening, gentlemen.
Okay, we have Steve, Jim, and Glenn. Very good. Jim, I believe that's, I didn't get your call, but I believe that's the Canadian station, PE.
Yes, Victor, Victor Echo 3, Juliet, India, Whiskey, mobile north of Toronto in snow. But yes, I'll be listening through the net, assuming further down the road my the other repeaters I plan to use cooperate.
Very good, Jim. Nice signal. Mobile, copy you well. Okay. We got enough to get started here. K2YO, Bernie, go ahead, sir.
Hi, good evening, John in the net. Dick, if you're out there, I hope you get well soon. I just thought I'd start off with your topic of what would we do differently, what have we learned. I can offer my perspective. I had planned for the food, the water, the batteries, all of that kind of stuff. Gasoline was the thing that I did not have an adequate plan for. We did not have a generator. We were prepared to rough it out in the dark. So now my wife and I, we don't have children, so we could kind of put up with that, and we also have multiple properties, so we could get access to electricity in other places. But one thing that I've been thinking about is as soon as gas containers become available again, of buying 4 or 5 5-gallon containers and keeping them in the workshop back on the shelf, because when we did have opportunity to get fuel, I found that I just didn't have containers to put it in. You know, I've got a gallon and a half container for the snowblower and pressure washer, but it probably would make sense to either get some, you know, some large 5-gallon type containers and keep around.
Very good, Bernie. Good information. I don't think, my personal opinion, I would not store that in my home. If you have an outside shed or something, you know, that's a little way from the house, that's where I would place it. And you want to get something that has a vent capability for the summertime. That's the only other recommendation I'll make, but very good. So you were prepared with food and water and the essentials. The only thing you didn't have was fuel. So, okay, so your next thing will be to be prepped with fuel. Very good.
The one slight fill on that, I'm not going to be storing gasoline. I'm going to be storing gasoline containers. Counting on, we saw that gasoline was available, but, you know, when you could get it, you wanted to take all you could get. So, no, I will not be storing gasoline in the house. I will be storing empty containers for use next time when we do have a fuel shortage.
Very good, Bernie. Okay, yes, I understand. So, if you get warning, maybe you could just fill up two of them beforehand and be ready just in case and store those outside. But, yeah, I would imagine 5 gallons, 7 gallons to have that local and right there for you. Yeah, that sounds good. And maybe some of these new LED battery-operated lanterns that they have. I've seen those out, and they seem to be catching on. They do a good job.
QSL, that, absolutely. We had a couple of, they look like, what do you call them, hurricane lamps. But our LED lamps, and you know, they made them patterned after the old-fashioned hurricane lamps, which would not be a good idea to be using in the house. But they were patterned like that, and just lasted for forever. It seemed like I don't remember ever putting the batteries in them.
Bernie, in your area and the damage that you observed, was it taken care of within not expeditiously, but within a reasonable time, or were there major delays? You have any information on that? KC2WGB.
Well, in my area, I pay approximately 25 to 29 cents a kilowatt for electricity, and for that premium price, I expected premium service, and I did not get it. We were 9 days without electricity. I know there are many other people that are hit worse than us, but I think on average, there was no impediment to get to us. There was no need for inspections. It was just a matter of getting the power back on, and I do not think LIPA did acted efficiently. And seeing the people down south, you know, on the south end of the island that are even worse than us, I know that LIPA is not acting expeditiously.
Okay. Good observations. I am shocked at that rate you just mentioned. That's approximately 60% more per kilowatt hour than we're paying here. I think we're paying, like, maybe 17 cents. And you're at 29. Wow, that is a big jump.
Yes, we're Long Island is close to the highest electrical rate in the country, except for some areas that are very far rural and, you know, it's just hard to get to. I will say that I bought 3 rounds of drinks for the boys at Bangor Hydro because they're the ones that got us working. And I happened to run into some of their boys in a bar one night, and anytime I see the guys are Bangor Hydro, they're drinking free around me.
Excellent. Good way to make sure they come back. All right, Bernie. Thank you for that information. Let me move on to Dennis, KC2WGB. Over to you, Dennis.
KD2 AOC.
KD2 AOC, go ahead.
Alpine Mew, we really didn't get a lot of damage, but I really set up well, and I set up even more after. I set up a 24-volt inverter with 10 deep cell batteries, and I got a tip for people. You don't have to go out to the store and buy these batteries. Just go down to the local landfill, take your voltmeter, and check the batteries that have been thrown out. Fishermen are excellent for throwing out batteries that are perfectly good because they don't want to get stuck out in the water.
Very good recommendation, Dennis. Unfortunately, here in where I live in Staten Island in New York City, you're not allowed to do that. I assume you're allowed in Long Island to go to a local disposal yard. You could even go to a junkyard where they bring batteries in because they're registered to handle it. That's very good. Now, how many batteries did you buy? Basically, what did they cost each? And did they all work for you when you charged them? Back over to you, Dennis. KC2WGB.
John, I bought no batteries. It's actually frowned upon to take batteries from this landfill. But if you get to know the people who work there, they have absolutely no apprehension about letting you take them. If you tell them what the purpose is and they can relate to it. I have 10 batteries. Most of them are 100 amp or more. And they're all perfectly fine. And right now they're on an inverter with a transfer switch so that when the power goes out, I have a gang box connected to the Wi-Fi. Let me drop for a second. Connected to the Wi-Fi and the modem and the phone so that if cable vision hasn't gone out, because they usually drop out when the electrical goes down, we still have connectivity. Or we can go to a MiFi, which is Verizon, to get internet access to find out what's going on around us.
Well, that's excellent news that that is available and that you're able to procure those items. Let me ask you, on charging, are you using one of the new battery minders, chargers, or something similar to that, or a regular battery charger?
I've heard that discussion, John, before on the TechNet, and I wish I could have got in, but I couldn't. There are many different chargers. One of them is called the Pulse Charger, and that seems to be really effective with desulfocating the plates on the batteries. What I have is a inverter, a 2400-watt inverter, continuous, that will also have a three-stage charging. So it's bulk, absorption, float, but also has a equalization setting so that I can actually desulfocate the battery plates when I choose. So it's just an automatic process. So it's a very good item. It's a trip light, and like I say, it has the automatic transfer switch. So it's really a seamless way to keep your power up. Over.
Dennis, are you able to charge the batteries individually, or do you charge them as just a parallel unit altogether? KC2WGB. Back over to you, Dennis.
Actually, what I've done is I put them on a marine battery switch. So onto one or two, I can charge two batteries at a time because it's a 24-volt system. Or I can put it on both batteries on a setting and actually charge all four batteries at one time. But the great thing about having the marine switch on the batteries is that if I set it to one, I can hot swap out the two batteries on the number two circuit so that I never have to drop anything that might be critical to have powered at the time. Over.
Very good. Sounds like you've got that square rooted. And with that system, you won't be cooking the batteries, so you could probably get much longer life out of those batteries than anybody else. And the fact that you can desulfate them is going to reactivate those batteries, and you're probably going to be close. like new. Very good. Also, in your area, I don't believe, I think you said you didn't sustain any damage out there, but as you drive around, what do you feel are the issues that aren't being, that attention isn't being paid as it should be? If you have any opinions on that, we'd like to hear that.
Well, that's a $10 million question, John. Listen, I in my area there were some second homes that got flooded. So they really weren't a concern for the primary residents because they were somewhere else. But I spent time down in the Rockaways, and that's like no man's land. You have Mayor Bloomberg, who's there's nothing to see here. You have the Red Cross, who sold one car. And nobody really doing much of anything. And then you had other grassroots organizations who were really digging into the community and helping out, trying to get the mold out of these houses, trying to get the heat on, trying to get their electric on. And you had government, New York City government, asking them to leave. There's something wrong with this picture, John.
Yes, Dennis, and that's what I've been hearing. A lot of things that were promised are not being delivered. I know that's true on Staten Island also. And look at how many weeks have gone by. I believe you're in the real estate business, so you know the value of the properties and the homes. Have you heard anything about the decision in the floodplain area, the 100-year floodplain area, about them not being able to rebuild? Have you heard any issues like that?
No, John, I've not heard that. As far as the 100-year plane zone, that's probably going to become a 15-year plane zone. But, no, because historically, if you take a look at June Road, which is right down on the south fork of where I live, they get to rebuild it each and every time, and they get the taxpayer money to pay for that. To replenish the sand, to rebuild the houses, and they're really not in an appropriate place to have houses. As far as, you know, the Rockaways, I almost get the feeling, and I hate to say this, but I almost get the feeling like they're trying to push the people away so they can do something else with the land. Not that it'll go vacant, because I don't believe that's true. Over.
Yeah, the locals may want to, the local government may want to build expensive condos with a view or something like that. You can never know what they have planned. But good information, and it's good that people are out there paying attention to what's going on. By the way, Al, I believe you live out on the eastern end, and I understand there's a community, I don't believe it's Bayville, but a community where a bridge was damaged, and there's only one road going into that community, and then there's, I think, a dirt road bypass or something. Do you know anything about that bridge, whether or not it has been totally surveyed by the engineers, and what they're going to do, and about how long? Any of that information available? KC2WGB. Back to you, Dennis.
KD2AOC. No, I'm sorry. I can't give you any information on that. I actually wasn't aware of it, but if you know the town, I can try and find out more about it. Over.
No, I'm not privy to the town. I don't remember. It was mentioned last week, and I've heard it discussed this week while I was monitoring that there are some difficulties. I believe W2OSR, Bob, I think he has experienced that, so I don't know if he's listening, but okay. Thank you very much for that information. And we'll move on down the log here. But hang in. You're right. It may become a 15-year floodplain. And that'll be a sad thing to see happen. Let me see. Next on the list, Monkey's Uncle. Bernie, pick it up. KC2WGB.
Okay, K2MU here first. Are you copying me okay?
K2MU, copy you fine. By the way, I just wanted to make an announcement. remember to wait a couple of seconds after the beep. That's very important for our Canadian friends and some of the other people that are on delays. So I haven't been doing that either, but let's try to do that. Over you, Bernie.
Okay, K2MU here. Yeah, I'm standing in my living room with my HT, and actually I have a big apartment building between me and the repeater, but I think if I'm in just the right spot, it bounces off the buildings around me and gets there. So, I had a question, but if you want a comment, Bayside, or technically Oakland Gardens, all that happened here was we lost internet for several hours. That's the good side. The bad side is just about every block had trees down on houses, on cars, on the street. Also, it was like a checker pattern around here. Some blocks didn't have power for about a week or so, and other blocks weren't affected. My comment was, my observation was that 2.5 weeks later, it took about 2 to 3 weeks, I think closer to 3 weeks, to things were changed. You know, things just had been left there. That was a little depressing, and can't help but wonder where our resources are for a situation like that. Let me drop it. As far as my preparation, I charged up my shell cell and my lead acid battery and my HDs, and I had a couple of days of communications, and that's about it. But anyway, I can answer any questions you have on that. I have a question pertaining to sound. I have a little sound meter on my iPhone, a little sound app, and it seems like even in the quietest places, there's about 25 decibels on that thing. And I'm wondering, are these like high-pitched sounds? You know, sometimes you hear a high-pitched sound. Picking that up, what is sound meter picking up if there's a constant 25 decibels, even in the most silent condition? And it just occurred to me as I was waiting to ask this question, I actually have an old-fashioned sound meter. And I wonder if it does the same thing on that. Maybe it's just an anomaly in the program, I don't know. But maybe there's something about sound that I'm not aware of, some kind of background ambient sound. So I wonder if you know anything about that, John. Back to you, K2MU.
Well, my knowledge on that is limited, but I have done some experiences. I have some experiments. I have a B&K Rural Care sound level meter, and I've noticed the same thing. What you may do with the cell phone, it depends on where it is most sensitive. You may want to try to put a piece of foam over the microphone input and see if it's random noise that's being generated within the cell phone itself. That is a possibility. I've had that happen on some very sophisticated instruments. Unfortunately, Dick is not with us to answer. I would give you a much better answer, but that's my experience with sound instrumentation. And another thing, too, see if it has directivity by moving it and changing its position, vertical, horizontal, rotate it in azimuth, and see how much the level changes. That'll tell you if it's being generated within the cell phone or you're actually picking up room noise. That might help you. KC2WGB.
Okay, that other station recognizes that, but I'm just going to follow a question on that. Yeah. Am I developing tinnitus? I mean, or are there actual high-pitch sounds going on? I was under the impression that TV sets, some kind of electronics, emit a very high-pitched sound. Because generally speaking, I will hear this sound only indoors. I'm beginning to wonder, I'm just, you know, I'll let you guys know what I figure out, but have you noticed the same thing? Do these sounds exist on the outside as well, or am I just developing this? I don't know.
I have noticed that outside, the lower frequencies are more readable. The higher frequencies, you're right, television sets, some of the older ones put out a 15750, 15 kilohertz pulse signal from that flyback area, horizontal output, which is something that can be picked up that you may not hear depending on your audio acuity. So if you go outside and it drops, that sounds to me like reverberating noise that's being generated within the structure itself. So you may be able to approach each device and see if the level goes up and down and try to do it that way. And you may want to attenuate it with a pad so that you can get closer and get a better reading. That's what I would try first. Back to you, Bernie.
Okay, I'm trying to find my position here where I could stand for the best transmitting here. Hope you're hearing me okay. Yeah, I get a little bit of that, but I will do some more and report back. Really what I'm trying to figure out is something about these high-pitched sounds, or is there some kind of energy that's going on there, but we'll figure it out. Because I'll tell you, I was up in the mountains where it was so quiet, it's not funny. I mean, the quietest you could possibly imagine. And we're still getting 25 decibels. So anyway, thank you very much. Enjoy the net as always. I hope Dick is listening and transmitting soon. Back to you, John. K2MU.
K2UPS Mobile.
K2UPS Mobile, recognized. Good evening, Richard.
Yes, good evening, John. I just had a comment about the village that had the bridge out. That's Bayville, which is on the north side, central Nassau County, on the north north shore. And I believe the town that it's in is either the town of Oyster Bay or the town of North Hempstead. I don't have any other information other than what you had, is that one of the bridges was out. But I can try to look up when I get home. I'm in West Virginia right now.
Okay, Rich, thanks for that information. So it is Bayville. I wasn't sure. Okay, and I'm sure other people will be checking it out, too. I'd appreciate any news if you find it or what's being done and how it's going. Okay, let me let it drop, then we'll go on to the next one. Hold on 1 second. All right, into XJN. Wesley, good evening. You had a comment, sir?
After Paul.
Okay, very good, after Paul. I'll put you down. Next person on the list was Steve. I think that was GLI. GHI, I think.
Evening. For those who don't know, I'm located in Ocala, Florida. I used to be from Huntington, and I've been through all the weather and all the things that Long Islanders go through, the snow and the ice and the rain and the traffic jams and everything else. Since I've been down here in Florida, I noticed one thing. Everything that they do down here has hurricane in its plan. As it turns out, a few years ago, there was four hurricanes that passed through the state that actually wiped out the 911 service. The people who came to the rescue were the hams. The sheriff was so pleased, so happy to have them, he went and set up a facility for them and bought them all new radios. And we can do anything from Winmore to B-Stars to whatever. So, you know, we're all prepared. Don't underestimate the amount of preparation needed. And that's what I would contribute to the net on this subject.
That's great information, Steve. And more people should be aware of what the ham community does for the public in these emergencies. But if you notice, the media doesn't mention it because they think they're covering it, and they don't. They do not do a good job, and I think they're prejudicial in a lot of cases. So, and by the way, your full call sign, Steve?
KB2GLI.
KB2GLI. Very good, Steve. You know, I've noticed for many years, Florida in construction, they have to have the rafter clips that are screwed in to keep the homes from the roofs from lifting from the homes, plus secure foundation mounts. And a lot of homes I know on the Gulf have shutter systems. Some of them are electric, some of them are automatic, and of course some are manual. And that's being required by insurance companies now. So Florida has been way ahead of the crowd with hurricane preps, and they don't get as much destruction from the wind like we do up here. Maybe they'll lose a few shingles, but the roofs aren't being blown over off the houses. You know, unless they get those 200-mile-an-hour winds, nothing's going to hold together. But that's interesting how Florida manages that. Back to you, Steve, if you have any further comment. KC2WGB.
Yes, that's true. They do put shutters, you know, like the roll-down screens you have in the city for the stores, on the west side, because that's where the winds would be coming from the Gulf. The buildings are not as high. You don't see very many two-story buildings. They're all made of stone. There is one thing you'll notice in the garages, that there's a bar that securely locks the garage door. Because if it blows out and the wind gets in the garage, then the roof's going to come off. And as far as the way they hold the roofs down, yeah, they probably have twice as many clips or whatever they use to hold the roofs down. You'll see tree damage because the oaks down here, you know, rot out just like they do up on Long Island. Everybody make sure to get their garbage cans in and anything that'll fly around. And, you know, we do get tornadoes, too, as a result of these storms coming through. There's little tornadoes that build up inside them, and that does a lot of wreckage, too. One more little thing. They say that you should have about 2 weeks of canned food in supply. I thought that was an awful lot. I mentioned that to somebody, and he said, oh, yeah, we do that, but at the end of hurricane season, we donate it to the food people.
Well, that's a great idea. And, yeah, donate it out to the food people and then resupply it for the next hurricane season. Huh. Great idea. Up here, we're not even required to have roof clips on our rafters. I think that's going to come about in the next couple of years. I think they're going to make that part of the code. But Florida has not only lightning, but they've got hurricanes, and it's been going on for years. And those people down there, they get a 60-mile-an-hour wind, that's nothing to them. I hear Florida, it's like a joke. You know, but of course, we get the snow and they don't. So different states have some issues, but Florida does handle it very well. Well, Steve, great information. And if you have anything further, let me turn it back to you, see if you have any further comments. This is KC2WGB.
Okay, thank you. No, I don't at this point. I'll just listen to the rest of the net and what other people have to contribute. Thank you.
Comment? Go ahead. Call sign, please.
KD2AOC. As far as that 2 week supply of provisions, you can get long life shelf food. I'm a member of CERT, and they recommend 3 days, but actually most people within the organization believe that you should have at least 2 weeks of food and water. You know, food is one thing, but water is actually probably more important. So that's just a note. Thank you.
Dennis, quick question. The MREs, what is the lifespan that you can store that type of food? Is it months or many months? Do you know? KC2WGB.
I think the MREs is not months, it's probably years. I have some provisions that will be good for 25 years. And they're not expensive. You know, grains and dried fruits and stuff. So it's good to have stuff on the side, because you never know.
You know, everybody expects the cavalry to come in and rescue you. But guess what? You know, if it's a really bad storm, it's a really bad tragedy, they're not going to be there. You have to rely on yourself, not somebody else. Over.
GMP Red Comet.
GMP recognized. Yard Dennis, I was watching a program the other night, and they were saying that the average use of an American is approximately 100 gallons a day of water. Okay, you don't need that in survival, but that number just floored me. Any comments on that? And then I'll turn it over to CMP.
Well, there's no doubt that, you know, most Americans use things like they're not important, but once you're in a situation where you need a certain amount of water each day to survive, it becomes important, and you're not going to take your showers, and you're not going to do your dishes, and you're not going to do the other things. All I can say is that if there's a storm impending, and if you have a house that has two or three bathtubs or one bathtub, fill it up to the brim, because that water may be really, really important in the days after the storm. Over.
Good information, Dennis, and yes, you're right. That's why people listening to the opinions of people on this repeater may heed the warning a little better next time and be a little better prepared. Usually, they don't. Once the storm goes away and all the rebuilding happens, they seem to forget. But it's just incredible when disaster strikes and people aren't ready for it. It's like chickens with their heads cut off. And now they talk about evacuating a place like New York City. Can you imagine the insanity in that type of plan? I just don't see it happening. I don't think it could be done. But anyway, okay, I'll move over to CMP. Your full call sign, sir, and your name?
Yeah, John, I have a comment about the water. Comment also.
John, the first name is Bill. It's KD2CMP, Kilo Delta 2, Charlie Mike Papa. A couple comments about the first, the MREs. The minimal is 5 years. That's stored at high temperatures, as much as 10, depending on how they're stored. It's a good thing to have, but not very good for elderly people, very high sodium and things like that. Let me drop. Basically, is that a freeze-dried type of material? John, it's hydrated, so they actually they heat up in the air water, and they use a chemical heater in a bag, and they bring it up to temperature. It's not completely dehydrated. It is hydrated, most of the things, but they are they're very, very high in preservatives, so it's not a good quality meal for any stretch. If you remember the Desert Storm Syndrome, most people, they had like nervous reactions back in the day. That was from the preservatives in the MREs and the preservatives in the drinks, because they didn't add pure sugar. So not a good food, good in the short term, but not good in the long term. Thank you for that information. Here I thought that was, I know a lot of our great military people are eating those things on a steady diet when they're out in the field. So, all right, very good. I was thinking about buying a few for myself just to have them there. With that storage life, that sounds like a good way to go. Okay, I believe Wes had a comment on the subject. KC and 2XJ and KC2WGB. Over to you, Wes.
Comment when ready.
I think it was 100 gallons per day, and quickly got educated. It's not really per person. It's all industry. One power pound of hamburger use approximately 1 gallon of water. 1 ton of steel use 62,600 gallons of water. United States news print use 300 million gallons per single day. And the water used to manufacture new cars, 39,090 gallons per car. And 1 gallon of milk is 4 gallons of water. So how much water is used during the growing and production of the chicken? 400 gallons. I believe industry is the one that is the most of user. And a question for you and others, how much really each one of us uses the water personally per day and per year?
Okay, Wes. Industry and all of those things use a lot of water, but they're saying personal use in America is approximately 100 gallons per day per person is required for them to live. Well, not to survive, but in their lifestyle. That takes in an awful lot of water use. You think if there's four people in a house, four adults, it's 400 gallons. And if you look at the water bills, that seems to be almost right. So, a lot to be said about that. And pretty wasteful. KC2WGB.
JF, what a comment, or question, I should say.
So recognized, but before that, we have to go to Glenn, who's on the list. Glenn, pick it up.
Did I want to put a hole for use of my own water instead of the city water? Enter it, sir.
Wesley, please wait for the beeps. Glenn, pick it up, sir. Glenn, if that was you, you cut in and out. No audio.
All right now, John. Can you hear me?
Yeah, got you now. And let me have your call sign, please.
Sure. KD2CY.
KD2, and the suffix is?
QYW in the mobile. KC2QYW.
KC2QIW. Go ahead, Glenn.
Sorry, this is Joe. Joe on the mobile. I'm just checking in.
Okay, Joe. I was in the middle of talking to Glenn. Glenn, could you come back with your call?
KD2CYZ. Kilo Delta 2, Charlie Yankee Zulu.
Charlie, then Yankee Zulu. Go ahead.
I'm attending school, and in doing so, I actually work part-time in a hardware store, so I got a chance to observe people's habits up into this. Obviously, post-hurricane and pre-hurricane. So I got a couple of thoughts on it, I guess.
Go right ahead with your thoughts on this issue. KC2WGB.
I guess as far as human nature goes, there was a fairly large percentile that did wait till last minute and kind of bum-rushed the place. Of course, as you would figure, the usual things, batteries, flashlights, and such, hurricane lamps, hurricane oil, lanterns, everything of that nature was the first to go. And then post for that was all the materials used to mend up the damage, tarps, nails, screws, basically everything you can think of. Heaters were another big thing that went. So I happen to work. I'm going to drop for a second. I happen to work on the South Shore in a fairly well-to-do area, upper middle class, you know, from upper middle class areas, but most of it on the Bayside. All of it being on Bayside, I apologize. And a lot of people lost their heaters, their crawl spaces filled up with water, and of course they lost their heaters. And then we had had that nor'easter following. So then we also serviced propane. So we did a lot of propane. So, and we did sell a tremendous amount of generators. So my advice would be, as we can see with the gas line, stay away from the gas generators. Go to the propane generators. I'm going to drop. Only because you could store the propane for a longer amount of time. I think possibly indefinitely where gasoline goes bad. So I'll entertain a question if you have something to say, John, but I don't mean to go on.
No, this is very good information, Glenn. Let me ask you a question. Say, do you know, like, the small generators, 2 kilowatts, how long do they run on a 20-gallon propane tank? Do you have any idea?
I did some investigating on my own, and I didn't look. I would think it's about somewhere in a nature of 10 hours for a barbecue tank, which is a 20-pounder. I was looking for a 4,000 kW, which is called the Sportsman. That's the one I found online. It's a 4,000 peak. And that was reasonably priced. It was like under $300. It was around $300. And I think that one was about 10 hours of runtime on that.
Very good. And that was a 4 kW, I believe you said. All right. Nice size. Now, the propane, I believe you're right, you could probably store that for many months without leakage. I don't think you'd have any problem at all, especially if the tank was protected from rusting. Great idea. And that would eliminate the problem going for fuel. And I don't think you'd be in a position where you're going to need it for 6 days or 10 days. So a couple of tanks would probably get you through most of the issues with hurricanes. We are very seldom like a snowstorm. When have we ever been snowed in for a week? It doesn't happen that often. So there's a lot of things to calculate when you're going to spend money, buy a generator, and store fuel. And this is why the TechNet is important, to discuss these issues and get different opinions from people, because each person has a different set of, a different configuration for their survival. It's nice to know these issues. Thank you very much for that information, Glenn. KC2WGB. Maybe you have further comments.
That's it. KD2CUSIC. I mean, you know, out here, a lot of people have barbecues, so most of you have barbecue tanks, so you have a ready container should something happen. And again, the call for propane, people were using it for heat. And face it, too, that's a lot of. I left it for 10 days, and I had a propane heater that I just passed and I used, so it maintained the temperature in the house, and that was good. I also happened, which I'm running now, I have a solar setup that I bought from Harbor Freight, about, $200, has some panels and a charger, and I have a deep cycling marine, about 185 reserve amp hours in it, so I had that throughout the storm, too.
Okay, well, with what you've learned and what you've seen in your observations, you'll be better prepared for the next storm. Let's hope it is 100 years from now, but a few people have mentioned this may be a 15 or a 10-year event. We don't know. And I have spoken through the summer with many people and warned them that the water temperature was so high, I thought we were going to have multiple hurricanes, but instead we just got this huge one. So that shocked me. I was never prepared for something this size, as most of us are not. Okay, let me move on. I believe the next person with a comment was Wesley. N2XJN, KC2WGB, TechNet.
N2XJN. More than 13 million Americans use private wells for their water supply. And I was wondering, since I found out that 2 to 7 gallons is being used to flush the toilet and a 5-minute shower is 25 gallons, the dishwasher uses 9 to 12 gallons, and a hand wash dishes 9 to 20 gallons. Then question is, would it be allowed to drill on your own backyard if you decide, John,
the well has to be tested and certified. You cannot drink it, but you can use it for watering your lawn and bathing and things like that. But because of the issues here in New York and the aquifer, you should not drink the water. You would have to treat it and have it tested. It's a big morose to go through. But yeah, you can put a well in at any time. It depends on your water table. Most of the areas here, my area, I would have to go down a lot. But in most areas in Staten Island, 20 feet, and they've got water. Pretty reliable source, but not drinkable.
And what is the contents that is that makes that water non-drinkable, if you will? And
well, not that they'll admit to it, but I think it has a lot to do with that the largest landfill in the world was here on Staten Island, and we have a substance called leachate, which is a liquid that comes from the dump. It bleeds out at the bottom, at the lowest point. It goes into a moat, and it's pumped back up into the top to be evaporated to the air. Well, some of that, even though it's lined and they claim doesn't leach, that's what's leaching into our soil, and it's contaminating the water. So over here, it would be a dangerous thing to drink it. Just an opinion. Don't have any rock evidence on it, but it seems to be what most engineers think. KC2WGB, back to you, Wes.
And 2 off of Sierra Sierra.
Okay. Thank you very much, John. Few more information. The water weight, about 8.34 pounds, and the weight of the water in cubic foot is 62.4 pounds. The water drops in inch of rain in 1 acre of ground is 27,154 gallons. Now, this is interesting because that water weighs about 113 tons. So, with all of this usage of the water, it does not look like we have a much problem with the water. The material was taken from the United States Environmental Protection Agency. Enter ship.
Yeah, there's a lot of information on water and rainfall and evaporation and the permeability of the soil and the perk soil, the percolation tests that are done in soil. You can read a lot about that on the web. A lot of information, but you have to be careful. It depends on where you live, whether it's potable water or not. So, okay. Let me pick up N2 Alpha Sierra Sierra. Your name, sir, I should know it, but I'm forgetful like Dick.
Hey, hello, how are you? It's Greg. Hey, I just wanted to just to see something. I was trying to talk someone into getting an HT programmed to get the, you know, it's kind of hard when you have one of these, you know, those Chinese HTs over there. So I'm trying to talk them into programming it through. And if you could just, I just wanted to try to key up the H50 machine, that's it, just to see if he actually keys it up.
Go right ahead, Greg, no problem. KC2WGB, give it a shot.
Yes, for the comments. Coming through, Greg.
Okay, you're coming through, Mike. All right. That's all we wanted to do, and if that comment station was probably saying to get the programming software. I'll pick it up, comment station. I got to jump back on the landline. And listen, you guys, carry on your key, so thank you so much for the interruption of it. And you guys have a great night. And to Alpha Sierra Sierra, I'll be clear.
KB2DBS for the comments.
KB2DBF, go ahead with the comments, sir. And your name?
Good evening, gentlemen. My name's Rich. First time user. Long time ham operator. MREs, I got a bunch of things. But MREs, they're scaled for calories. The greatest, best thing in the world. I got 5 cases at home. They're good for 5 years in a cold climate. They drop quickly in a hot climate. And as for water, let me drop here for a second. As for water, I'm out here on Long Island. I have a neighbor with a 10,000-gallon pool. and I have a water purification system you can get online in 2 buckets from Home Depot. Will take almost anything out of the water.
Rich, is that a type of reverse osmosis? And by the way, I know that desert temperatures are cold at night and very warm in the daytime, but extremely dry. Does that make a difference with the MREs, if you know?
That's that, DBS. I got 13 years military, 2 years special forces. I eat MREs for snacks. If you keep them on a pallet and you keep a top over them, they'll stay at a medium temperature. Think like a cave where it's 62 degrees year-round. Over.
Okay, understood. So if they were put in a cave where it's cool and dry, you can extend the life. They wouldn't depreciate that fast. Okay, now this system that you're talking about, filtering the water, is it a reverse osmosis or is it just the microfine filters that you're dealing with, if you know?
The procedure is you get 2 buckets out of Home Depot. You drill a hole in the bottom of one, and you attach this multi-filter. I say again, multi-filter. And you can dump in muddied water, anything, and it comes out pure on the bottom.
Rich, do they recommend boiling that water after that procedure? Because I don't know if that would remove all of the microorganisms.
It wasn't mentioned, but yeah, you can do it if you want, if you have the resources. But this stuff's supposed to take everything out and make it drinkable. It's online. It's a screw-in type filter. It's good for, like 2,000 gallons of water. And it runs about $30. It's just a cylinder.
I'm at BE3JIW.
JIW recognized. Okay, well, that sounds like a good deal for $30. A couple of thousand gallons. Not bad. But we have an issue here with things like cryptosporidium, which I don't think the filters remove, but I'm going to check that out on the web. I didn't know that was available, but great information. And that's something that you could store, that filter, and nothing's going to happen to it until you use it. So, boy, that's a good tip. KC2WGB. If you have any further comment, back to you, Rich.
Yes, if you go to YouTube, I say again, YouTube, and look up water purification, they have a video of it. It's a removable filter. I've got 2 of them. I've also got a neighborhood of 10,000-gallon pool, so I'm kind of set. Other than survival, my house is hardened for 30 days. If I can't get off this rock in 30 days, I got a problem. But I have the weapons, of course. I have the generators, and I have enough food to last 30 days.
Well, I know you have to think about it, but it's really an irritating issue that you have to worry about having a weapon in a disaster. But it is very important, and I agree with you. But you'll find some people that get very upset with that. I'm not one of them. I was a very big gun collector for a long time, so I support your position. JC2WGB.
KD2 DBS. Oh, roger that. Yeah, no, I'm one of those. I'm not a prepper, but I've been trained enough to know that I can survive. There's no way, including Staten Island, I don't think there's any way that you'd be able to get off that island with the traffic involved. Over.
Oh, you're absolutely right. When we have rush hour time, whether it be morning or afternoon, it's going to take you a half hour to get off of this island. Can you imagine in a mass evacuation? With people going in different directions because they're uncoordinated. You're absolutely right. And preparation. We have things called evacuation zones, and we have these silly signs with arrows pointing to them. And they're basically parking lots. Okay. So you get to the parking lot. How are they going to evacuate you, whether you're on Long Island or Staten Island? We had a major problem. We had all of our bridges closed. We had no way to get off there in this storm. So what purpose is the evacuation? Got me. Don't know. KC2WGB.
I have an answer for that. I'm the